This is Fresh Air. You may think that Major League Baseball is tough, but it's child's play compared to the intensity found on Little League ball fields. The kids aren't the problem. It's the high-strung, obnoxious parents who threaten coaches and publicly humiliate their own children. Bill Geis currently works as a features correspondent for CBS News. His book, Little League Confidential, is a funny behind-the-scenes exposé of the game. He coached Little League in Ridgewood, New Jersey for 9 years when his son and daughter were young. It took him a while to finally figure out the personality transformation that these parents undergo. He calls it Little League Syndrome.
Well, I hadn't really identified it. I thought maybe it was just peculiar to me, but I think it came when I saw my son go up to bat for the first time in Little League when he was about 7 or 8 years old, and I turned into something of a monster. I started yelling at the umpire, wanting to do in the other kids on the other team who all wanted to get my little boy out for some reason. He had all these 9 people facing him, wanting to do him ill, wishing him ill. So I think that's when it first came to me.
Well, there is, of course, the things that you say out loud at a Little League game, and then there's the internal monologue, the things that you say to yourself.
Right, and some people say them all out loud. And those are some of the people that we write about, or write about in the book. Or you find that's part of Little League Syndrome, is some of those things that you maybe think normally about other drivers, other people all the time, that starts coming out. You find yourself saying these things, screaming them, or you're sitting next to someone who's saying, strike the bum out. And he's talking about your 7-year-old son. And so that's when it gets a little testy in the stands.
Well, you know, baseball is really a very cruel game. And I often wonder, how do you explain to a 7-year-old that even the best players playing on the best major league teams are only going to get to base with a hit about a third of the time? And
so
that's a very cruel lesson about baseball, of course, also about life.
It is. It's one of the reasons. Kids, for some reason, to me, I think they're less and less able to accept that. They want to succeed every time, or their parents want them to succeed every time. And it's kind of a serious point. I used to have a talk with people. I'm talking about my players as people. They're not real people. No, they're little people. And I'd tell them that very thing. I mean, that Don Mattingly was earning $5 million a year, and he was getting one hit. He's getting 3 hits out of every 10 at bats, and that they shouldn't expect to do much better. But for some reason, either the kids or the parents, or I don't know where they get it, they're not really satisfied with that explanation. I mean, they want 9 out of 10 or 10 out of 10.
Well, again, I don't think a 7-year-old could really comprehend that.
No, I know. So yeah, it's a very difficult thing to try and explain to them. As you say, it is kind of a cruel game, actually. And that comes to you right on the first time your son or daughter gets up to bat and you realize that. I was on the wrestling team for a while in high school, and very poor, I must say, as a wrestler. And it's sort of like that. I mean, you're kind of one-on-one, you're up to bat. If you strike out, that's your fault. I mean, you did that. It's not like soccer or football or lacrosse or something like that, where you kind of blend into the action, and what you do is kind of dependent on what the other players are doing. Perhaps you can blame a horrendous mistake on somebody else, or maybe no one's watching you, but there you are when you're up to bat for all the world to see, and when you strike out, it's a terrible moment.
Now, I assume when you played Little League, there were no girls that were playing on the teams that you were involved in, but certainly girls do play with boys on Little League teams. They tend to be in the minority, but you
Definitely.
Do see them.
Yeah.
How much do you think the game is still about fathers and sons, and what did you do with the girls on your team?
Well, it's always an interesting thing. Well, I like to think that I treated the girls pretty much the same way that I treated the boys. I mean, we in the book, we have an episode where we treat one of the girls rather poorly, trying to convince her in a critical situation to go 2 blocks away to go to the little girl's room when it's her turn at bat because she wasn't very good. On the other hand, I was criticized by a reader for saying that, but the fact is, my leadoff hitter was a tiny little girl named Emily who she'd come up to bat, and all the boys would be whispering out in the field, move up, it's a girl, and all that. And we placed her first in the batting order to demoralize the other team, because she would always hit a double or something to start the game and make them feel badly. And, of course, there's also something in the book about a girl who hit a home run wearing a tutu. She came from ballet class and put her shorts on over a tutu. It was kind of sticking out the top of her shorts. She hit a home run, and I'm assuming the boy who threw that home run pitch is in therapy somewhere today.
But did your team members accept these girls after the home runs and tutus?
Yes, I think so. I think the boys did. There's a difficult thing sometimes with girls. They have trouble at the early ages in, you know, competing with the boys in some of the athletic endeavors, and some of them are kind of forced on the teams by fathers who say, you know, my daughter's as good as any boy, and sometimes there's a social aspect to it as well. My daughter's a pretty good athlete, and she has a good friend whose father is constantly forcing her to play on boys' teams so that she will improve and one day be much better than all the girls because she's played at a more competitive level. But she hates it. She cries and all this kind of thing. So, I mean, there are problems that way, too. There are social aspects to it that have to be addressed. But in the early ages, I think 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, there are always girls now in our little league in the town that I live in. And, I mean, if they could compete and play, I mean, it was they treated pretty much like everybody else. I mean, the boys who don't do well on the teams are not having that much fun either. I mean, it's kind of just a skill thing, really.
Well, you also describe the kind of natural enmity between coaches. And having sat through many Little League games on the sidelines or being a team mother, it is an amazing thing to watch the level of competition between coaches. I don't know whether it's testosterone. I don't know whether it's upbringing or exactly what it is. Do you have any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I think it's just kind of a naturally competitive. With me, the things that I admit to in the book, my worst moments as a coach always came about against these other coaches who had kind of, I thought they'd kind of cheated at the draft, or I knew it meant so much to them to beat me that I would start competing with the other coach. And that's where Little League gets all completely out of whack. That's where two coaches are kind of playing a chess game, and the kids are pawns, and the coaches really don't care whether the kids are having fun or not. They're out there to win. And there we have coaches like that. I always want to say there's a coach in our town, and I always want to, you know, ask him how the season's going. And just to say to him, well, as long as your team's in first place, I guess we're having a good, you know, a good year and with Little League.
Well, I want to talk some more, but we have to take a very short break. And my guest today is Bill Geist, and we're talking about Little League. It's a sport that he has coached for a number of years now. His book about his experiences is out in paperback, and it's called Little League Confidential. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Bill Geist, and we're talking about Little League. Well, we must spend, I think, some more time talking about parents. And as a coach, I assume you really do have to deal with these parents in a very, shall we say, intimate kind of a way. Again, what do you what was the hardest thing about being a coach in dealing with parents?
Well, you kind of have to take it case by case, but I mean, there were always parents calling. I remember one episode when there was a boy on our team who struck out, and he was beating his bat into the ground and crying and all this, and I went over and put my arm around him and was comforting him. And when the game was over, the boy's mother, I thought, was coming over to thank me for being so kind to him and all this and helping him through this. And she told me that I was to keep my hands off of her son and that he had to work through his own problems. And so, I mean, you just never know where it's coming from next. I mean, obviously you get calls all the time about my son, my daughter should be playing more in the infield. And sometimes you put kids in the outfield for self-protection. Some of the kids don't want to be there. Some kids recognize that they're not good enough, perhaps, to play first base and have balls thrown very rapidly at them all the time. They don't want to be there. They might plead. There are kids who don't want to be there at all. I mean, they'll sit in the dugout and plead not to be put in the game, and you have to explain to them there are rules of fairness that they have to play so many innings and so on. But with the parents, and they really are the only real problem, I think, with Little League. I mean, you just never know where it's coming from with them.
Well, now your son played on your team, and I assume that all the parents of the other kids on your team assumed that you were going to give him preferential treatment.
Well, I have a two-part answer for that. One is that, yes, you do give your own child preferential treatment, and I think at some level you figure all this time that you're putting in, the unpaid hours and hours that you put in and talking to parents on the phone and rushing home from work to be there on time and, you know, driving on the shoulder of the highway so that you can get to the games on time and being arrested for speeding and all this kind of stuff, that, yes, you deserve to give your kid a little bit of preferential treatment. It does turn out normally that the kids of coaches are often a little bit better than the other kids simply because their parents put so much stock in how good their kids play.
You've really described a lot of the sort of downsides of yeah. Little League, but certainly, again, from my experience, as much as there are those long and horrible moments, that there are those times when, you know, when the klutziest kid on the team finally gets a hit. And I'm not sure there's words to describe the feeling of watching that. I can only imagine how the child feels, but as an interested parent on the sideline, to see a kid actually catch a ball for the first time, it's really wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's the real satisfaction in coaching. And these always sound like the endings to Hollywood productions, but they happen all the time. That's the real satisfaction, I think, are the kids that don't play very well, that you're actually able to teach them something and that they enjoy the game more, which I think is what it was supposed to be all about to begin with.
Well, is that why you coach, for those small moments?
No, it's for the grotesquely preferential treatment for your son and daughter.
I like your honesty.
Okay. But I'm still kind of hanging around coaching my daughter a little bit in softball. We're the Tarvin Fighting Realtors this year, and we had baby blue caps, and which is not a good color to have, by the way. You like to get the red or dark blue color, and you always pray too. We have a team in town that's sponsored by the Ridgewood Corset Shop, and the boys in particular can't stand to be on that team and have that emblazoned across their backs the whole season. So, light blue caps and Ridgewood Corset Shop, you don't stand much of a chance.
Well, you know what I've enjoyed, again, watching from the sidelines, is seeing grown-up men talking to little kids about baseball and about being with them through their disappointments, being with them through their moments of triumph.
Mm-hmm. I think about that, too. I see these kids, some of my daughter's friends that you know, she played on teams with, and I mean, I can remember, you know, when the I think there is, you do, there's kind of a special bond. It is, after all, you know, for whatever, maybe we need the organization to make us spend time with kids that we would not normally have done. I mean, I probably would not have been, you know, driving home at 90 miles an hour, sitting on the bus cursing in traffic, leaving the office. It was the only thing, you know, in our driven with our careers and so on. It was the only thing that would get me home early, on time. It was the only possible thing in the world that could have gotten me home at 6 o'clock or 5:30 or whatever when the game starts. So perhaps we need these organized activities to make us do such things.
Well, thank you very much, Bill Geis, for joining us today.
Thank you.
Bill Geis' book is called Little League Confidential. This is Fresh Air.